97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, dwindling viewership for and attendance at NFL games. Our guest, Jim Steak, former NFL official, a man some have called the godfather of the modern day Super Bowl. Jim, the elephant in the room is, of course, players taking a knee.
Mm-hmm.
Has that hurt attendance or viewership, or is it too early to tell?
Well, I think anything that's out there that causes some sort of controversy in some sort of part of your constituency is going to hurt things. The NFL, it's impossible to define what you think is an NFL fan. They are so diverse and so different in what they can be. And there's no one thing that can happen that's going to please everybody outside of your team winning. So I think at any point in time when you start kind of crossing over to some of those things, political issues like that, you start getting some part of this that gets offended by whatever statements are being made in some way, shape, or form. So there are a lot of things out there that are taking place that have caused people to get turned off. Now, how turned off they are, or how much they turn around and say, you know, I'm never watching this again, or I'm cutting the cable, or whatever it is, and how much they really do it, that's a question to be evaluated down the road.
So, you know, we've seen examples of Kyle, American Sniper, his wife, sends a letter to the NFL, a former Navy SEAL sends a letter. The guy goes on the internet and burns his Steelers jacket. Yeah, so, you know, there are anecdotal signs that say this has had some effect on the fan base. I don't know how much, and I don't know if there's any way to tell how much that particular factor has played into numbers this year, viewership numbers and attendance numbers.
I think there are bigger issues than that. It is one that's out there. I know last year when we were talking about ratings, it was all about the election. You know, and certainly that was true when you compared this past Monday night with the same year, week three last time, because the debate was exact opposite. But do I think that on Sunday afternoon last year that we were watching CNN instead of watching the NFL? I'm not sure that that was taking place. So I think there are little chips that come away from it. But I think the most important thing is trying to identify what you are and how you're trying to reach out to different constituencies out there. And I think that's the biggest problem the NFL's got right now, is that who am I? What am I going to be? How do I please all these people? How do I take care of the traditional people, you know, the people that are our ages that have grown up on this and watched, you know, terrestrial TV? And how do I take care of the new generation and get them attached to the game and grow it forward? And obviously you see it this week, you know, it's with the different outfits that are now going to broadcast the games, trying to reach out to those. So I'm not sure you can evaluate sometimes the ratings based on the fact that the old systems of ratings, that's not what we're doing. I think you're watching on devices rather than sitting down and watching TV. So if you're just taking the Nielsen rating, you kind of got to misconstrue what's taking place as far as who's consuming and who's not. And I don't think this generation is going to sit down and watch a game for 3.5 hours. So you've got to figure out how you do that.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of factors. And I think it's hard to separate any one factor out and say, this is causing 10% of the issue. And this one's causing 15%. I do want to ask one more question, though, about the players taking a knee. And one of the criticisms that I've read is that essentially there's no league that has wrapped itself in the American flag historically as much as the NFL has. And yet the NFL is now saying, and we'll get into where this prohibition mm-hmm. comes from, is now saying, we're not going to do anything if players kneel for the national anthem.
Yeah, I can go on forever about what's been mismanaged in this when this first happened with Kaepernick and what took place and where the league was and where the teams were and how the teams proactively or lack of proactive status went after addressing what was going to take place. This was not going to be a shock that something was going to take place. I think they were hoping that this was just going to fade away, and it had started to fade away. And then obviously the president made his statements last Friday, and that rekindled everything that was taking place. But I think you have to come up with a plan. And I'm not sure, because one individual in Colin Kaepernick decided, I'm going to take a knee, and literally did it for 2 weeks without telling anybody he was doing it, why he was doing it, or what was taking place, until somebody sat at a 49ers game and said, what is he kneeling for? And never had an end game of what it was all about. So I think what has to be delineated here is this the right message to be out there? Is it the flag? And you are right. The NFL, whether it be flyovers or whether it's huge flags or whatever it is, celebrating, you know, I don't know, celebrating is the wrong word, but, you know, the anniversaries of 9/11 and all the different holidays that are out there that come around this, you know, Veterans Day is coming up here in 2 weeks, which is going to be very interesting how the NFL handles that, you know, with what is going on. So I'm not sure that was the right message. And because you accepted one individual telling it, there's a different ways that we can protest. We can look back into the 60s and how that was done. It's ironic with the PBS special going on now in Vietnam War. It shows all the things that took place during that decade of the 60s that got us finally out of the war in 72, but and how the protests took place there and what they were. And so how do you get there to the end game? And I think they've got to figure out. And this is something they should have spent time last fall, this spring, this summer, figuring out how they were going to address it, because it is an issue that I know is very important to a significant number of players.
All right. I want to talk about what the rule book says about taking an E. We'll do that when Sports Focus returns.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Jim Stieg, former NFL official, about all that's happening with the NFL regarding attendance at games, viewership on TV. So, Jim, you know, when you see something on the internet, you have to believe it because it's on the internet, right?
That's correct.
So there's the meme going around that says the NFL rule book says this is what you'll do. Of course, the rule book has to do with holding, clipping, face mask. It's not the rule book, but it is the game operations manual.
Correct.
The game operations manual says specifically that you will be on the field, that you will hold your helmet in your left hand, that you won't talk, that you'll stand up. I don't know if it says the stand up part, but there are fairly specific guidelines. I think the key word is guidelines for players to follow regarding the national anthem. NFL official Brian McCarthy says it's a policy, it's not a rule. What's the difference between a policy and a rule?
Well, it's always convenient with the NFL how you interpret whatever that case may be. And I've been on the other side being with a team, and their guidelines have gotten, if we didn't follow them, got us fined.
Substantially.
It's substantially fined. I mean, we had one where, you know, their noise rule, we allegedly violated because our PA guy literally spoke and said, you know, second down and 7 at the point that the team was breaking the huddle, and said we violated the noise rule at that point in time. So we got fined like 10.
They'd broken the huddle.
They'd broken the huddle. Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's pretty innocent of what he was trying to do. He wasn't trying to rabble-rouse the crowd in any way, shape, or form. The guidelines that are out there that everybody's got to follow are things that are there. Now, let's turn the clock back a decade ago. A decade ago, the league changed their policies, and because of the pressure from the network, that the teams were going to stay in the locker room for the national anthem. And when I was with the Chargers, we disagreed with that because we thought that that was wrong to do. But the league mandated that you stayed in the locker room because they didn't want the anthem to be covered in any way, shape, or form as backdrop as the networks were setting up for the game. They wanted the action that was coming forth when they came out to do their stand-ups, you know, or setups up in the booth. They wanted the crowd, the teams coming out of the tunnel and the noise that was taking place. So ironically, a decade ago, you were sitting in the locker room when the national anthem was getting played. Now, the league changed that rule, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. Why? I have no idea why they changed it. But it is ironic that if they'd kept that rule the way it was, you never would have had nobody would have said a word because nobody would have been out.
Yeah.
But it was done again, I think, to the point that you brought up earlier. It's a little bit of kind of wrapping yourself around the flag. and the mistake was made at that point in time. You know, it's at the Super Bowl. When you watch it, obviously the teams are on the field, and it's a very emotional moment. We can think back to Whitney Houston and players literally crying on the sidelines as that anthem is being sung. So I think there was a little bit of that there. But it is a guideline. You're told to do it. Guidelines in the NFL are basically pretty strongly enforced. Rules are rules are rules, whether they're written or unwritten. Spend a lot of time trying to do everything to get done. But I don't think that the commissioner or anybody wants to take a hard position on this because they're afraid of offending whatever constituency it may be. And this constituency probably is the players.
NFLPA.
Well, PA not as much as the individual players.
Okay.
And when I was with the Chargers, one of the great things that Marty Schottenheimer did was we had a council of players of 10 or 12 players that literally met every week. And I participated in a number of those. And we talked about all sorts of things from what jersey we were going to wear for what game, you know, to issues like this. And I'm not sure how many teams did that and were ahead of the game or ahead of the curve. Certainly during the preseason, which we can talk about forever, the value or not. But when you go on a road trip and you're playing Saturday night at 8 o'clock, you're sitting around a hotel doing nothing all afternoon. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of time for these issues to be talked about. And they should have been talked about and with the team or with a subset of the team to know exactly how everybody was going to feel. And then you've kind of got yourself established to what the relationships are. Now, I heard that, you know, they had 4.5 hour, 5 hour meetings talking about this on Saturday before game. You know, I'm sure there were a lot of coaches. And part of what happened with the Steelers, that locker room was divided. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. That's why they didn't come out, because Tomlin said, I'm not going to come out and have some guys kneel, some guys, you know, laying down on the bench, some guys standing holding hands, and some guys just standing. And he wanted to come out as unified. Unified isn't necessarily what's trying to be accomplished with this thing, but it is part of the problem.
All right, so part of the problem. But the the issue of declining viewership, mm-hmm. that's pretty much TV-wide,
yes.
broadcast-wide. It's not just the NFL. It's not just sports. But fans disguised as empty seats, that's been a problem. I mean, internet search will show you that the league has been wrestling with this since at least the 80s. Why are people not coming to the games?
Well, there's any number of reasons, and I think there's been a lot of lip service to, you know, what you call fan experience. Whether that's truly believed or not, I don't know. I know when I was with the team, I believed in it wholeheartedly. And it's important that you understand that the fan experience, I think for every event, starts and ends when you turn the ignition key in your car in your driveway and hit it out, and when it comes back down, when you close the garage door, when you come back. And I think you've got to have that whole experience there. Now, let's look where we are. The Falcons, bless them, have turned around and rolled back prices on concessions to make it affordable. Everybody else has let – you see guys with $14, $15 beers.
Sure.
Out there. There's got to be a point.
Parking's $20.
Parking for the Charger game is $100.
No kidding.
You know, what are we trying to do here in this if we're going to price people out of that? And let's understand who your constituents are. If you're buying a season ticket for an NFL team, you know, and there are two of you, you're spending what, $2,500, you know, post-tax income? Mm-hmm. And if you're making $60,000 a year, $45,000 after tax, and you're spending $2,500 on that, what's that come down to? 5% of your total disposable income? And that's not counting concessions, parking, buying a jersey, or whatever the case may be. So I think that affordability has to take place. And part of that is, let's go to TV. You know, the NFL Sunday ticket price, which, you know, remember when Red Zone was given away for free? Now it's, what, $110 to get it? So you keep increasing expenses for the people to consume your product, because that's the way you can do it instead of coming out with creative ways to get there. So I was interested in looking at Goodell's contract, which is coming up. Is he going to get compensated for increased revenues that come from increased ticket sales or increased carriage fees for the networks or increased Sunday ticket or increased, you know, licensing fees for merchandise? So I think they look at that's part of the problem.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about declining revenues, really, based on ticket sales, people showing up in the stands, television coverage, viewership of NFL games. And Jim, we as we talked about last segment, that's been going on for a long time. And you were, in addition to being with the league, you were with the individual team, the Chargers. The Chargers are getting hammered this year in terms of attendance. There are now two teams in LA, the Rams and the Chargers. On the one weekend, those two teams combined attracted fewer fans than saw the USC-Texas college game. How can those teams survive with such poor attendance?
Well, let's remember now, unfortunately, the way television is and everything and those revenues come, it used to be 70-30 split gate and as much as national TV revenues. It's probably 30-70 now the other way. So the amount of money that you're guaranteed coming out of the league, which is in excess, you know, maybe as much as $300 million that you're getting as part of your franchise, the amount of, that you're getting out of the, you know, the individual game is a lot less. I mean, the individual game is probably anywhere from a $10 to $15 million event all the time. So if it's
so even if it doesn't hurt you that much financially, it looks terrible.
Oh, it looks awful. And the optics on a television to sit there and how you're going to shoot the game with everything on one side being half full or whatever it is. And listen, baseball's got the same problem because the way they sold all those seats behind home plate, you know, every time you take a pitch and you look there and you go, you know, it's 25% sold out because those are $500 a piece getting done. So I think the optics are very, very poor with that. But I think you've really got to, again, the LA situation, you know, has got, there are books that should be written on how this was mismanaged and how it was treated during the course of the last 25 years. It failed with two teams, you know, over a decade of the 80s and the 90s when we had the Raiders and the Rams. I don't think that the league ever wanted to go in there with two teams, you know, at the moment. They wanted to get one cemented and settled that it was going to be in there, and they kind of made that decision with the Rams. They didn't, I don't think, expected the Chargers to jump in this last year. When they did, now they're faced with, well, we made a decision. I guess we got to stick with it and put them in there. And I think that that's a serious concern because Los Angeles is unlike almost any other market. There's so many other things going on. And when you were the Chargers and you were in San Diego, Monday after the game, you're 1A above the fold. You know, any other time during the week, you're probably above the fold in the sports section, okay? If you're in Los Angeles, you may be page six in the sports. You know, obviously right now, SC with their football team is probably the lead story that's taken off place right now, or the Dodgers going to the playoffs, or the fact that basketball training camps have opened, or hockey has started.
There's a lot to compete for the fans' attention in LA.
Yeah, and you're not going to get that domination that takes place talking about it all the time on radio, watching it all the time on television, and reading about it all the time. So I think that's a problem that they had, and I think they wanted to make sure they cemented one team in there pretty firm. Now, they made their bed, so they've got to lay in it, as they say right now. And it's going to be a struggle here for a while. And it doesn't help when you're 0-3. You've got to win.
Yeah. So we have about a minute left, right? You are commissioner for the next minute. how are you going to deal with these issues? Taking a knee, that'll go away. There are bigger issues to deal with.
Well, I think, first of all, you've got to be inclusive in everybody. I think the player's standpoint or whatever it is, you've got to figure out how to be involved with them and have them have input of what's taking place. I think in LA and everything, you've got to start making, you've got to have a long-term focus of where you want to be and how you want to get there. And I think I would sit down and I'd say, here's where our master plan is, and everybody's got to buy off on where our master plan is going to be. It can't be about, I got to have money now. That has always been a mistake when somebody decides I have to have money.
For a team or for the league?
For anybody. Okay. Anybody. If the whole thing is always about driving money right now, you're making a lot of bad decisions. And there's been, having worked for Pete Rozelle, there's a lot of times that a lot of money was left on the table, trying to look at where you wanted to be in the long term. The pressure has been for the last 25 years, I've got to have it now.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Jim Stieg. Thanks also to producer Hannah Kim. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.